Today is Sunday, January 7th, 2024. Yep. This is part 5 of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Dan Cockrum. Dan spells his last name C-O-C-K-R-U-M. My name is Tom Martin. Good afternoon, Dan, and Happy New Year. How are you today?
Oh, I'm doing pretty good.
Good.
Shake on in. I'm up right in McMobile, anyway.
I'm glad to hear it. Dan, last time we talked at the end of our part 4, we were talking about what to talk about next time, and you mentioned it's probably about time to talk about the Silver Bridge and the flood. Can you pick that up?
Yeah, sure. Before I do that, I'd like to go back a little bit when we were talking about switching from mules to helicopters.
Okay.
I've totally forgotten the exact chronological event there, but I told you earlier we didn't use the contractor's helicopters. We did when my boss convinced everybody we could get more time inspecting the work in the canyon if we didn't ride the mules in and out, if we used the helicopters,
okay,
as the contractor did. So anyway, we did use the contractor's helicopters for a while, but there was some questions about how, I don't think anything is really out of illegal or whatever the contractor was doing in the operation of his helicopters, but I think he was pushing the envelope.
Ooh.
Anyway, he had a pilot named Wayne Learn who was concerned, and Wayne made partners with Bob Thurston and started the first tourist helicopter flight, and we stopped using the contractor's helicopters and started using him. But in the meantime, there had been enough questions about the safety of the flights and whatnot that the powers that be decided that we would get hazard pay, a time and a half hazard pay for the eight-hour day that we flew in or out of the canyon. Or any other flights we made in the helicopter, we'd get a full 8 hour, one and a half time hazard pay.
Okay.
And it kind of came as a good surprise for us because it also paid for all the flights that we had before we were told we could get money. So we got some nice checks.
Oh, wow.
At that time, yeah, back pay.
Yeah.
Hazard pay. So,
yeah.
Wow.
Hey, do you remember, Dan, you told me this last time, I got very excited to hear Wayne Learn's stories. You mentioned that Wayne and Bob Thurston had teamed up to form a partnership to provide tour helicopter flights. Do you remember what year that was? When was that?
I think it would have been, let's see, it was either 65 or 66.
Okay. And this was before Elling Halverson started doing tours, air tours, is that right? Or?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, the time I was there anyway, Elling didn't have any kind of, any of that air flights out there, you know, the helicopters. Or Grand Canyon. I think, didn't he buy out Grand Canyon Airlines too?
Eventually, I think so, but I'm not real up to speed on that whole air flying thing.
Out there at Toucan, he bought up, I can't remember what it was called, but it was the uranium mine community was out there at Toucan.
They had a trailer village out there.
Yeah, mobile home. I can't think of the name of what they called it. Elling bought that. That's where IMAX is. And I'm trying to remember if he bought the land for Squire. Yeah, he did.
Yes.
That was in that vicinity was the old VFW hall.
Well, no, hang on a second. Yeah, did he do that with Franz Rotter? Were they together on that? Or I know that it got complicated out there because Thurston's Red Feather, the lodge just south of there, and then the plaza inn was to the north of there. They're all on that same side of the street. It gets complicated. I get confused.
And that tourist flight that Wayne was doing with the Bob Thurston was right across, almost directly across the street from the Red Feather.
Right.
Over next to the old bar and grill over there.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know if do you remember the bar and grill there when you came into that area?
No, was Yossi, who was running that thing?
Oh, I can't remember now. They had the service station. Bill Thurston was running that.
Okay.
The Gulf Station. And I can't remember who was running the bar and grill.
I'm spacing on her son Dan, who was a coach at the school. I'm spacing on his last name. Hispanic, really nice people. Well, okay, moving on.
And of course, Mulkey was there too.
Right, the Mulkey Lodge.
Mulkey Lodge was there during that time.
But that was run by the concession out of the park, wasn't it?
No, Mulkey was. It was Amish.
Who?
It was some Amish group. they were what do we call vehicle Amish. They weren't the real strict Amish.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know how that's another story you could try to track down. I have no idea how that happened, but that was, Mulkey Lodge was owned and operated by an Amish group.
Okay.
And it had an indoor pool.
That would have been, how'd they get the water to fill that thing up?
I don't know.
I wonder if they trucked it in from Williams.
I guess they did.
Or Valley.
There was a little pump jack like you'd see in the oil field there, south, a stone's throw south of Red Feather.
Okay. What, just for show, you mean?
Pardon?
Just for show?
Just itself, a little pump jack that I think Bob Thurston put in.
Oh, you mean it was actually a working well?
I never saw it running, but it had been drilled and that thing had been sitting on it.
Okay. Huh.
It might have run, different hours. I don't know. I never saw it running, but somebody had tried to pump water out of that area, real low.
Dan, if you wanted to go out for a meal, to leave the village, the South Rim Village, and go out to Tucson to eat, where would you go? And we're talking about mid-1960s here, 66, 67, 65.
Well, you'd go to the Tucson Bar and Grill. There wasn't any other restaurant out there then, none of those fast food places.
Okay.
Trying to think. I don't remember ever eating at the mine, but the bar was there.
Okay.
That used to be a place you'd go if you wanted to go someplace besides Eldevar
But the Bar and Grill out in Tucson was the place to go.
Yeah.
And that would have been right across the street from Thurston's place, from Red Feather.
Right. He had I assume it's still there. His penthouse, whatever, was the second floor of the Red Feather. He could sit up there and look out a picture window of all his domain. From there.
What was Bob like? What do you remember of Bob Thurston?
I've heard a lot of stories about him, and I went out and visited with Wayne and him. I was even upstairs one time. He invited me up. I guess we had drinks. I don't know what. And at that time, I was dating a nurse.
Okay.
And we got to ride some horses of his out there in that pasture.
Okay.
What now? There's hardly a pasture there anymore because of all the development.
Yeah.
And he also imparted, when he and Wayne split up, somehow Wayne got some property from Bob north of the store. There was some trailer sites back in there. And when I went back to Grand Canyon in the 80s, Wayne still owned that, as I understood. But I never could, I never did see him. He never visited back for me to see him. At that time, he was kick space operator over at Kingman,
okay.
Managing the airport over at Kingman.
Okay.
And I don't know what happened to him after that. I lost track of him. When did you have?
Oh my gosh! It would have been in that time period in the late 60s. So there's a story. And again, I apologize because I can't remember Dan's last name right now. Of course, as soon as this interview is over, I'll go, oh, yeah, it was Dan so-and-so. And Dan's mom, Yossi, ran the Barn Grill.
Jose Lopez.
Lopez, thank you so much.
Yeah, I know. I didn't know. Okay.
Yeah, so yeah. Yossi Lopez, her son Dan. And Dan told me a story of Wayne... Somehow a helicopter ended up on a sandbar down in the canyon, or was it a fixed-wing small aircraft? And they ended up, Dan Lopez was a pretty light, he didn't weigh a lot. He was a very strong, but shorter man. And Wayne flew him down there, and the two of them unbolted this thing, took it apart, and I guess there were two helicopters down there. Wayne attached a long line to this thing and flew it out. And Dan was flying out behind and remembered watching the helicopter. The load started swinging to the right and swinging to the left. The helicopter would track to the left and it tracked to the right as this thing was swinging below it. But they got the thing out.
Yeah, I remember the incident.
What was it?
What? It was down there near where the Little Colorado comes in.
Okay.
The guy, the plane had landed safely down there on the sandbar.
It was a plane, okay.
Yeah, it was an airplane. It wasn't a helicopter. But Wayne did have two helicopters. He had two Hiller helicopters.
Okay.
And that wasn't the only one. There was one that didn't turn out quite as nice. A plane with six, it was loaded. I think it was six people, and it was a big Cessna. Was flying out of the canyon, and they missed the rim by about 30, 40 feet.
Oh my gosh!
And it was out past. I can't remember which point it was, but Wayne salvaged what was left of that with a winch truck.
Okay.
Off the rim. That was another salvage he did that I'm aware of. He was a certified mechanic. He built helicopters.
Okay.
From parts and stuff that he'd salvaged.
Wow.
I think that's how he first got associated with Halverson's. Hired him to. I know one of the helicopters that came with him from down in Seattle. It was Wayne had rebuilt it.
Okay.
And Halverson brought it.
So this small plane ended up, so downstream of the Little Colorado River confluence, maybe 5 miles, I'm going to say without looking at a map to get it exact, there's a long run of sand.
I think that's where it was.
Okay, if I was going to ditch a plane and I had to make a landing, that's where I'd go.
I understood, he made us. I don't remember the plane being that badly damaged.
Right. It would have been a great place to land. You could get down and actually park the thing. Then getting it out would be a challenge. You have to take the wings off, and you have to get this off, take that off, blah blah blah.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, Wayne, he was made a pitch to me. He said, "Well, if you'd buy a little trainer plane," he had a Debonair, a Bonanza Debonair, and he kept it out there at the old Red Butte Airport.
Okay. Where the hangar was out there.
Yeah, yeah. And I flew out of there with him a couple of times. Anyway, he had this Bonanza, and it's a little more complicated airplane, but he about had me convinced to go in half with him and buy a little Citabria. It's kind of like a Piper Cub. And he said, I'll teach you to fly. I'll teach, and we can make money teaching other people to fly. You get money to use the airplane, and I'd get money for teaching them. And I don't know. He about had me convinced, and then I bought another car. And everything. But at that time, the plane would cost about $5,500.
Okay.
So a brand new plane, that wasn't bad for.
Well, but in 1966, $5,500 was a lot of money.
Yeah.
You know, looking at it today, it's like, oh, okay, fine, that's easy. But boy, back then, that was a real chunk of change.
Well, I was getting having the duty pay, you know. whole time I was working out of San Francisco, I was getting per diem.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, so I had a little stuff. And no place to spend it.
Do you know the story of how that plane ended up on that beach down there? Do you know what happened to it?
I think it ran out of fuel.
Okay.
But I do know that it wasn't damaged that bad. And of course, big balloon tires on that sand, should have landed pretty safely.
You bet. Gee, if it was out of fuel, they'd just flown in some fuel and fueled it up and took off and got it out of there.
Yeah. Well,
I wonder if it was had a little more struggle. It had some sort of engine problems or something.
It might have bent the prop.
Oh yeah, they could have had some problems. It could be. Yeah, I don't know the story. Gosh, where are the Wayne Learn stories? Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Well, you need Josie, huh?
I need Dan. I think Josie's passed away, but I'm not sure.
I don't know if I remember Dan. I remember.
Well, Josie's son was Dan, and there, Dan is out in Seligman. I have to track him down. It would be fun to do that. Okay.
Well, there was two of those Lopez. Ray Lopez, I think that was her, Josie's husband.
Okay.
And her sister married another Lopez, and both Ray and them, and the other Lopez worked for Fred Hardy.
Okay.
In maintenance.
Okay.
So where are we now?
Okay. So where are we? We are in 1955 or 56. And the Silver Bridge is going to be built. Can you tell me why that bridge was built? What was it used for? And what do you remember about it?
Sure. Well, it had a new pipeline going in that had to have something to carry it across the river.
Why didn't it just get run over to the Black Bridge and go over that one and then out that way?
I'm not sure the Black Bridge could take the weight or the... I don't know how much movement would be in that water going through that pipe. But then, anyway, the decision was made. And it was, you know, there's a tunnel right before you get to the Black Bridge.
Yep.
Coming in. And I don't know, that might have been the area where the Silver Bridge is was a lot more available to put the bridge in without having to do a lot of more digging or tunneling or whatever.
Right. The Black Bridge is upstream and the Silver Bridge is downstream, and then the pipe continues downstream and then goes up to Beats up there, up to Plateau Point, and then across that away. It's a good line for a pipe, kind of out of the way. You don't have to deal with the box or any of this stuff there in the Pipe Creek.
That was a popular crossing area. That's where the High Line was when they had the High Line that had the basket under it that they were using before the Black Bridge was built.
Right.
Silver Bridge is within that same area.
Okay.
That terrain.
Okay.
And that had already been determined when I got there. But we did have to stake it and get it to know exactly how many feet it was across the river.
How did you do that with your surveying tools?
Yeah, just with a transit, and it was textbook triangulation.
Yep. Okay.
You get a good line, which we ran upstream along that rocky beach. We laid out, I don't know how many feet, maybe 100, 200 feet, and measured that. And then you'd go to each end of that and turn angles.
Yep.
So you could decide the length of the span.
And that, so were you using the Black Bridge to cross? Because you would have had to have somebody running a rod there on the river right, and somebody with a transit on river left, and they would need to be talking to each other.
And handy talkies.
Handy talkies. Okay, little two-way radios. All right.
Yeah.
And then you would basically have a known line distance on the ground, and you would turn an angle from the backside on the far end of that line over to the fella on river right, standing there with his rod, and then you would go to set up on the other end of that long known line, turn back to where you were at your last station setup, and then turn back to that same person standing there, and then you would be able to calculate the distance out over there.
But in the meantime, we'd have a point over there to aim at.
Okay. Yep.
We would actually have the point of both abutments on the north side where the baseline would be. That one end of it would be the center line of the abutment.
Okay.
For that end of the bridge, and then over on the other side, that's when we got, that's nearly a sheer cliff over there on the south side.
Okay.
And we've got a point up there, and then, as you say, you have a baseline, and you set up your transit on each end of that baseline and turn angles to that point across the river.
Yep.
And that gives you the three angles of your and you know so you just use simple trigonometry to figure out what the hypotenuse,
sure,
which would be the bridge center line.
Right. Okay. That's pretty straightforward mathematics there. So then you know the distance. I mean, do you just call we build bridges 1-800 and say, okay, I need a bridge that's so long, that's so wide, and make it.
I'm not sure of this because I wasn't in on the design in the office, but they probably had a contract out to somebody who knows bridge working.
Okay.
And when Halverson built it, he had workers come in for, I think they came from New York, subcontract.
Huh.
To erect that bridge.
Okay. The steel erectors.
Yeah, and I just remember they'd work out there. They did that in the summertime.
Oh, wow.
And they'd work out there on that bridge, and then they'd drink milk. I don't know if they had it spiced or something, but it was. I couldn't get over that being out in that hot sun.
Oh, my gosh.
And they had to have their milk. Some of them did. I'm not saying the whole crew did, but just something that I remember from that.
So do you remember how they built that thing? Did they build the towers on the either side and then string cables and then just start laying their steel out to uprights from the cable?
Yeah, that's basically the way they did it.
Okay.
All the cables and the heavy iron beams, steel beams, galvanized steel, that was all flown in by that Huey helicopter.
Okay.
As well as the two 600 horsepower pumps for the new Supai Gardens pump house.
And that was like a heavy lift helicopter?
Yeah, well, it was heavy lift then for
them.
Vietnam was going pretty strong. I don't know, they couldn't get one of the, they've really got a heavy duty helicopter there now. If you, I don't know if you've seen it or not.
Oh yeah, it's just an amazing machine. That carries a huge amount of weight.
Yeah.
But this,
yeah, well,
they had a
stainless steel pipe, so they not, they're having to have something.
Yeah. And this the Huey that they were using, was that a like that kind of Wiener Schnitzel sausage kind of thing with a rotor right way out front over the pilot, and then a rotor way out in the back?
No, it was a commercial version of the Huey that they used in Vietnam's gunships.
Okay, I'm not familiar with that. Was it,
yeah,
like seat four people, or how big was the thing?
Boy. It wasn't the big cargo type helicopter. It was a utility helicopter, HUI. I can send you a picture of it.
Yeah,
the one
please.
They had, I think, it was painted. It wasn't military colors. It was in a commercial color.
Okay.
But you if you've seen any of the Vietnam movies,
yeah,
once you see that helicopter, you'll recognize
right.
what it is.
Okay, so this has like the sliding back door.
No, this one has doors on each side.
Right, the sliding side doors out the back of the, behind the pilot's doors.
The one you would see in a Vietnam movie, Wars, they would have those doors on both sides open.
Right.
And they'd have some guy sitting there with a minigun shooting out the side of the helicopter.
Right, that's right.
They could have two, yeah.
Okay, so that was their heavy lift helicopter. Okay.
For the job at that time, yeah.
Right. Okay.
So it was there for, I don't know, maybe a week or several days, hauling the cable, you know, and the electrical cable that goes from Havasu Gardens all the way to Phantom Ranch. That came in big stools,
okay.
And they couldn't just cut it up in little pieces to fly. So they flew those spools and dropped them off at different areas along the work site.
Okay. And this was to bring in high tension power. Well, let's see. They needed that at Havasu Gardens for the pump they were going to, for the lifting pump they were going to put in there.
They had what they needed there, the capacity, 15 kVA. I don't remember them having to change any of the line up from that pump house up to the south rim.
Okay.
That line was big enough.
And that was like a three-phase line coming down off near the uranium mine. Isn't that where they drop over that power, comes down that way?
I think that's where it is over there. I don't remember ever seeing it.
So why did they need to run power down with the new water line? Where was that going? Was that just going to Phantom?
It went to Phantom. There was, plans. At the time all this was going on, all the sewage from Phantom Ranch was going down a pipeline to the Colorado River.
Right.
So there was sewer plant in the plans.
Oh, right.
And, and the fact that they increased some of the rental buildings down at Phantom Ranch.
Okay.
They got got a little dormitories or something. I know there's more buildings down there in that area than there was in the 60s.
Okay.
So it was laid in preparation for further development down there at Phantom Ranch.
Okay. Good enough. That makes sense.
And they had an inspector. APS had an inspector.
Oh, okay.
The whole time that power line was being laid.
Do you remember the inspector's name?
I can't remember it now. He was from Phoenix.
Okay.
I shared that bunkhouse down there, pump operator's house down there at Havasu Gardens.
Okay.
I shared it with him during some of the work time.
Okay. So you figured out how long this bridge was going to be, and San Francisco did the designing and contracted it out to buy it.
I'm pretty sure that's the case. I know when I was project supervisor up at Glen Canyon, are you familiar with the concrete breakwater at Wally?
No.
Well, it was a big floating, we built it. I was project supervisor for that.
Okay.
And I know it was designed outside of the service center. They hired somebody,
okay,
consultant, and I'm pretty sure that. But I could be wrong. There's a lot of bridges in the National Park Service, and they might have people. Well, that was part of my training when I was going to college. Is I learned how to build a bridge for not a suspension bridge, but a structure.
Okay.
Truss bridges for
okay.
railroads.
Okay.
So, anyhow.
All right. So the steel showed up. Halverson flew it down there, got a heavy lift helicopter, contracted it out with a heavy lift helicopter to get the material down there. Contracted out a bunch of iron workers to build the thing. Now one of the things I heard was that when the mules go over the Black Bridge, that bridge goes up and down. It just because the mules are moving along, and that the thought was that the pipeline wouldn't handle that up and down very well, just because it's under so much pressure. Now,
I don't know. I don't think the mules would go across it because it has that open graded.
Right. No, the mules were never intended to go across the Silver Bridge.
Yeah.
Because of that, you know, it's like, well, they're already set going across the Black Bridge. But if that pipe was on the Black Bridge and the mules went across, it would go up and down and might hurt the fittings on the pipe.
That's a possibility. I never heard that that reason, but
that could just be a pie in the sky story. So be careful with that.
Well, no, it you know kind of makes sense, but that bridge will swing a little bit anyway in the wind.
Mm-hmm.
So over time, it might have an effect, even with the
Maybe.
Wind blowing on
yep.
it.
Okay,
yeah.
Fair enough.
But I know unless mules have changed, it was pretty well understood that you wouldn't get a mule across that bridge anyway with that open grate.
Right. And that the open grating design and the way that bridge is built, it just seemed like it's a little more stable for lateral movement, meaning upstream, downstream, than the Black Bridge.
Well, yeah, you got that pipe under it.
Right. To kind of lock it all together?
Well, it's just another part of the structure.
Right. Okay.
I'm sure, like, say, there may be a little movement there even with that, but I don't know how long that... I don't know what they're going to do. If they're going to replace that pipe under there with stainless steel.
Right. Don't know.
I don't know either. Yeah.
And what else do you remember about the construction of the Silver Bridge?
I was down there when the concrete was poured for the all the anchors, and I was there when they were putting the steel up.
Okay.
I don't remember any instances that any of them. They seemed to know what they were doing.
So the concrete for the anchors, was that just sackcrete? Or did they set up some sort of little batch plant down there somehow?
Oh no, they had a site down there on the delta of the Bright Angel Creek, and they flew in washed sand and crushed rock.
Wow!
They had a rock crusher, and then they had a big, well, not a big, it was a commercial size cement mixer down there. And then they had power wheelbarrows, motor-powered wheelbarrows, that would take the concrete up to the anchor points on the south, on the north side of the bridge,
right?
Abutment and the north side anchors for the cable. And then they had that overhead line cable that they took buckets of. I don't know what to call them. You see them when they build a Hoover Dam, these big buckets that they pull a lever and it dumps all the concrete
yeah,
out.
Yeah, 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 yep.
Well, they used that high line to run all the concrete. It was mixed there at the delta of Bright Angel Creek, and then it was wheeled up there to the high line and taken across in a bucket, and that's how the concrete got in the butt mud over there, and the anchors, a cave had to be blasted into that vertical face for the anchors of the cable on the south side.
Huh, okay.
And so they had to fill that cave up. With
concrete for an anchor?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, they had these plates. They had these big, thick steel plates with holes drilled in them to hook the cables into.
Okay.
Those plates go back into the concrete. You follow me?
Yeah, I do. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Anyway, I was there for all that during that time. In fact, during the winter, part of that was late. Well, it was winter of 65 when they were building part of that. And I was down there. They had a wheelbarrow, and I didn't want to sit on the hot rocks. So I sat down in that wheelbarrow to make notes of what was going on. And then later, when I got out, part of my pants stuck to the wheelbarrow.
Oh.
Lucky I was wearing long johns. I didn't notice that they'd been using that wheelbarrow to move batteries around.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Some acid there, huh?
Yeah.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So anyway, that was one of the things that happened.
Huh.
One incident that I know happened to me while I was down there. Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, they were working.
Do you remember when they actually got the last pieces of grill in, grating, and you could actually walk from one side to the other, your first time walking across that? What do you remember about that?
Oh, I remember we were anxious to see how much of a gap, and we were, you know, there's a lot of adjustments they make with all that fan, but we were within a half to three quarters of an inch.
Wow.
On either end of that ridge. Yeah, it was very little gap there.
Nice.
Well, I always thought of Wilcox being one of my mentors, and he was really, he worked for Bureau of Reclamation before he came to work for the Park Service, so he was a very, very competent person and very, very into his work.
Nice.
In fact, one time, the family was trying to get that bridge named after him.
Really? So it would have been called Wilcox Bridge?
I don't know. M.W. Wilcox is his name, and he went by Martin Waldo Wilcox, and it went by the name of Waldo. But I had a call when I was in the regional office in Atlanta from one of his sons that I knew, and he was wondering if there was any strings I could pull at the Washington level. I told him, I said, I don't think I'll get very far with it, but I'll see what. But it never came in. I don't know if they ever named it.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah, no, as far as I know, it's called the Silver Bridge. I don't know if it has an official name. And I don't know that anybody knows, to connect it to Martin Waldo Wilcox.
Yeah, well, as far as I'm concerned, the government really got all of my... He retired in Army Reserve as a lieutenant colonel.
Okay.
So he was pretty sharp in everything he did.
Huh. So did you call that Waldo's Bridge for a while?
No, I didn't. That never occurred to me. You know, it wasn't as if he had passed.
Okay, right, right.
This was after he passed.
But was he there at the job site? Martin, was he there?
He was over... as much oversight as he could. He was all over the place.
Okay.
Depending on what, and he did most of the negotiating or whatever, any kind of thing that need to talk to the contractor about taking care of.
Okay.
Whatnot. You know, he'd fly out of the, if he was down in the canyon, he'd fly out to do that and come back in. Where I was down there mostly Monday through Friday. I was the only other engineer at that time besides him. We had some inspectors.
Okay. When was that built bridge finally finished? Do you remember?
I know it was pretty well finished, and we were doing pressure tests on that pipeline down there at that bottom, at that point in the flood, and the bridge was finished then when the flood happened, which was in April.
Yeah, maybe
April of 66.
Okay. And so let's finish up. Are we finished with the bridge? Anything else you remember about its construction before we head into the flood?
No. Somewhere in that collection of slides that I gave the park was a picture of one of Halverson's helicopters flying under that bridge.
Oh, wow. There's not a lot of room there.
No, and there's cables you got to deal with that's lower than the bridge deck.
Wow.
So anyway, that's the only thing. You said one time you'd see if they could find those slides.
I'm gonna cycle back around to Kim again now. Yep, I'm making a note of that right here. Okay. Okay. So then April was a rain on snow event. Is that right?
Yeah.
What do you remember about that?
Well, I just remember it was a weekend. We flew out with the all intention of going back in the next, knowing that this front was coming and we might have some rain, but we intended to go back to work down there on Monday. And by that time, it had rained and it was obvious. I mean, we couldn't fly. The storm was heavy enough that we couldn't fly, and the rain fell and there was, I don't know how many inches or feet of snow was still over on the north rim, but it melted all that, and the whole shebang came down Broad Angel Creek and did its damage. Took out all but one, or damaged all but one bridge, and that's the bridge that's right there, the last bridge at Phantom Ranch.
Okay.
Across Broad Angel Creek. That was the only bridge that was not damaged in any way.
How did you hear that there had been a big flood?
Oh, yeah. I guess it came up from Phantom Ranch.
Okay.
I think I told you they didn't really have a permanent ranger down there all the time because of all the stuff that was going on in the trails. Officially, the trail was closed.
Okay.
In those areas where the work was being done, so the rangers weren't always down there, and then the fella, the gauger, for
the USGS gauger, right?
US, yeah, he was down there, so he may have been a contact to let everybody know.
Do you remember his name at all?
I have to look it up. I remember it's he and his wife and a little boy.
Okay.
It's in the, I do have it in that little piece I wrote for the celebration of the anniversary.
Okay.
The Historical Society magazine.
Yep. All right.
I've got their names in there. My memory's really spotty now. But the guy and his wife and his little 2 or 3 year old child.
Okay. All right. Very good.
Molly. Her name was Molly.
The child or the gauger's wife?
The wife. Miggy. I don't know if it was Michael, but we called the little guy Miggy.
Okay.
And I can't remember. It might have been Bill. Last I heard, they were living in Albuquerque.
Okay.
Did you ever know where Wayne ended up?
I don't. And I would love to know more Wayne Learned stories.
Last time I saw him when I was up at lake, he was hired by the service center to fly a survey crew in at Rainbow Bridge for something they were planning. The service center needed, and Wayne came over from Kingman with one of his helicopters and took them and did that. And that's the last time I saw him.
Huh.
And that would have been in probably 1971, 72.
Do you know how Wayne spelled his last name?
L-E-A-R-N.
Okay.
And as I say, the last I had officially, he had that fixed-based operation over Kingman.
I'm going to see if I can find it.
Burnett. My spring went off my brain. The gauger's name was Burnett.
Okay.
Bill Burnett, Molly, and Miggy.
All right. What do you remember of your first return after the flood?
My first what?
Your first return to Phantom Ranch and Bright Angel Creek after the flood. Do you remember your thoughts on that? What you saw and what you were thinking?
Oh, I was amazed. We flew down there. I can't tell you. It wasn't immediately. I think we had to wait for some things to clear up and be safe to go down. And, you know, we flew first, of course, to Phantom Ranch, and just seeing the devastation there. I mean, the CCC comfort station at the campground was totally gone. There was all you saw was the sewer line that ran from it down to where it was exposed.
Right.
And there was none of the campground stuff was there. The tables and everything just disappeared. That staging area down there where concrete was mixed for the Silver Ridge, all the equipment was gone.
Oh, wow.
I had one picture in those slides that I gave the park of just about the 3 feet of exposure of a little bobcat. You remember the bobcat front-end loaders?
Yep.
Well, that one was buried right up to nearly within 3 feet of the top. That
wow.
was all the equipment that you could see. And they had, you know, cement mixer and all any other equipment, those wheelbarrows they had, they were gone.
Wow.
Somewhere towards Lake Mead.
You bet.
And then, of course, the flights on up the canyon, and we noticed the wreckage of those long expansions of that pipeline that was on pillars.
Yep.
Where we had to cross it, where we didn't want to put a bridge across, we put the pipeline up on these columns, and they were just wiped out. They were gone. And all the pipe that went in there, it was either gone or buried in the side. Right. And of course, we got up to where the powerhouse was for the north rim, and there it was halfway collapsed. The house, the quarters that the operator lived in, they were undamaged. The pump house to the north rim, it had been flooded, but it was salvageable. But the powerhouse, it was a write-off. A contractor, Howerson, did have, I think he had it sold. Somebody wanted the equipment out of there.
Mm.
The panels in there looked like something you'd see in that Frankenstein movie.
Yeah.
Over that old
knife switches and
but those turbines, I guess, were all right. Would have been useful somewhere. Somebody could have used them.
Sure, you bet.
It was just a wreck.
Wow.
What else? And of course, the damage that found the barn. No, it was a bunkhouse, I guess, for the Wranglers. Half of it was had collapsed. Had been the corral there, the that had been inundated and washed away on that side of the creek. Cottonwood was not damaged, as I recall.
Okay.
That brand new Gager's house, USGS house, which is now Ranger Station at Phantom Ranch, it had water up, oh, I think like 3 foot of water ran through it, but it didn't damage it, just flooded it.
Wow.
When they built that, there hadn't been any kind of a gauging station
Bright Angel Creek?
On Bright Angel Creek.
Okay.
And part of the contract that built that gauging station laboratory quarters building, which is Ranger Station, it also included a gauging station out on Bright Angel Creek. That okay. thing was totally missing.
Oh, wow.
It scoured, that whole area was scoured where it was. And I don't think they ever put it back. And I don't know when the Barnett's left down there or when that job was done away with. And USGS turned that house over to the Park Service to use for a Ranger Station.
Okay.
But I don't think there was ever an attempt to put that gauging station back in the Bright Angel Creek. What else can I tell you about that? Nothing, as I recall, was damaged at the mouth of the pipeline up at Royal Springs. That was on enough of a drainage. I don't think that anything built up that would have done any damage up there.
Okay.
And of course, the pipeline where it's broken and stuff, it had to be packed with sand and gravel, and even the pieces still in the ground had to be, you know, unusable. I wasn't there when they did the rebuild of that line, but I'm sure a lot of it involved blowing any of that pipe that they might use. They'd have to blow all that gravel and silt out of it.
Right. They have to clean all that junk out of there. That'd be pretty hard to do.
Yeah. I do know that after this, all the environmental concerns about damaging the size of the trail, that was totally forgotten.
Hmm.
When they got ready to fix the pipeline this time, they were going to build a road, basically, because they flew dump trucks and bulldozers down there. I do know that for a fact. And they weren't as careful about leaving footprints because that stream had just washed out any of the vegetation and stuff.
Right, so, and I think maybe at that time I wonder, because the Trans Canyon Corridor that connects the North Rim to the South Rim is managed much differently than the Wilderness Backcountry.
Oh, I can tell you about that.
What do you got?
Well, I said that I used to have to go into the regional office in San Francisco,
okay.
the Western Region Office, which Grand Canyon falls under. And I went out there for one meeting, and I was there paying, like, if there was any construction stuff going to happen, and I was there from my standpoint, from as maintenance and engineer for the park. Well, it did come up one time when I was there, the regional director was there, and they were talking about wilderness areas in the canyon to make it just what you were talking about. And the regional director turned to me, and he said, how would you maintain that water line if that was made into part of the wilderness area? And I said, there's no way we can maintain that water line without being able to fly helicopters in there with equipment.
Okay.
And, you know, that was the main, not that I'm trying to make any credit for myself, but he had my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
And it should have been apparent to everybody that you couldn't do that. You couldn't maintain that water line. You had to fly a crew down there with the equipment, the welder,
right.
generator,
right. Right.
and all that.
That all over again. You bet.
Yeah, so that's how that got out, left out.
Okay.
Of that. That's why they managed. And it's going. I don't know how much they're going to have the Indians being involved with this. Is that just for the monuments that's been established, or is that going to include also the wilderness areas in the canyons?
No, the Bajinawajo new national monument.
Yeah.
Is it encompasses Forest Service land from the Kaibab National Forest on the south side.
Okay.
And Bureau of Land Management land up at House Rock Valley on the north side.
Okay, I'm familiar with those areas.
Yeah, and it doesn't include any of Grand Canyon National Park's land per se.
Okay.
But just outside. And borders the park on both sides of the river, south and north. So, yeah.
Are you familiar with it? This is totally beyond what we're here for, but since you're out there, I want to ask you, are you familiar with the Navajos being upset about the NASA going to send remains to the moon on one of their rovers they're building, and the Navajos are upset because they don't want any human remains on the moon as part of their fear of belief or whatever.
Huh. I know nothing about that.
Yeah, it's in the paper here.
Huh. I know that the park reached out to the, I think it's 11 affiliated tribes that connect to the Grand Canyon, about scattering human cremains in the park, and then the park made a decision to go ahead and just stop that, because that was allowed, but they just stopped that.
Well, that's why I wondered, why I was asking you about that, was I know of all the, our maintenance guys, the guys on the trash run with the garbage trucks along the rim.
Yep.
It was not unusual for them to bring in empty remains,
containers.
Type.
Yeah,
yeah,
you bet. Containers. You bet.
And the park doesn't even know people going in. And I wondered how the Indians felt about that. So you said they have raised that issue, huh?
Oh yeah, you betcha. You betcha.
And you that bridge over there, Lee's Ferry. If you go down underneath it, there's plaques all over that where remains have been thrown into the Colorado River right there.
Yeah, and those plaques got pulled up out of there.
When they built the new bridge?
When they built the new bridge in 94, I want to say. I'm just shooting off the hip here.
Okay.
So those, but you're right. I mean, people, population growing up, this is inspiring landscape. It's a good place to, to let that, you know, I mean, I'd want my cream man scattered there, but, you know, then you have to respect other people that don't, and so, okay, fine, we'll figure something else out.
Yeah.
Let me look at the time here, Dan. What have we been doing? Let's see. We've been going just about an hour here.
Okay.
Maybe this is a good place here to wrap up this interview and put a comma in it, and we will pick this up again next time. What do you think?
That sounds good to me.
Okie doke. With that, then, let's conclude part 5 of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Dan Cockrum. Today is Sunday, January 7th, 2024. My name is Tom Martin, and Dan, thank you so very much.
Well, thank you for the opportunity.